Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, putting a world of knowledge within your reach with over 160 locations across America. 800-644-7733.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave. What's summer without swimming? Forget the beach. If you can't swim, it's just a blindingly hot, scratchy, windy waste of time where you get skin cancer. And kiss kayaking, canoeing, sailing, rowing, water polo, and all the rest goodbye. If you have little kids, better stay far away from them in the summer, or they might sniff out your insecurity around the water and never go in either. All the evidence points to one immutable fact. Learning to swim is a good thing, and the younger you learn, the easier it goes. Jim Spears has led thousands of children and adults into the water and onto swimming mastery. He teaches swimming at Aerobics West Health Club in New York City. We thought we'd ask him for some swimming tips. The big question for parents is, at what age should they enroll their child in a swimming class? This is actually a real point of contention in the swimming world. The American Red Cross recommends that children not take lessons until they're 5 years old, but Jim Spears works with toddlers just 6 months old.
There's two sides, or I believe Red Cross has two sides to go for with that. First off, children are not going to swim a beautiful freestyle or crawl style before they're 5 years of age, but they can locomote onto their back, float, get air, and do the beginning skills that it takes to be a strong swimmer. That's what my program is technically about, is getting them to where they can roll onto their back, float, breathe, and basically hopefully take care of themselves in the water. My program is geared a lot towards parents that have beach houses or swimming pools or whatnot, where there's no choice but to at least try to get your child to swim, because there is water there, and a kid's going to wander into the water. They're curious. That's their nature.
I was on vacation recently at a lake with my family, and I wasn't really sure how to tell my three-year-old about being safe around the water without making him even more fearful of the water than he already is. What's your advice to parents about how to keep kids safe but excited about swimming at that young age?
Well, at that young age, you know, three, I would take them in. I would definitely let them experience the water. I would get them into the pool or the lake or whatnot. Let them practice blowing bubbles. Teach them that when your face goes in the water, if you don't blow bubbles, you do end up drinking the water. Let them understand, like, the whole concept of this can be a dangerous thing. Of course, we don't use what I call the D word, the big drown world word. Don't go in the water, you'll drown. We try to avoid that at all cost, because that really programs the child to think the water's a bad thing. So you just get them in the water and let them, you know, acclimate themselves to it and have a good time with it. But, you know, always tell them there needs to be an adult with you. There needs to be set up guidelines that make sense for the body of water you're around.
What do you think of swimming aids, like floaties and those water wings that you see everywhere? Are they worthwhile?
I think that they give a child a false sense of security. I have had a lot of children that have thought they've had their floaties on and gone into the pool and swam and then basically sank because they thought they could swim and they didn't have the floaties on. So I think, like, again, they give a false sense of security, but I don't necessarily say don't use them. Like, if I have a parent that's going to a pool and I know the parent will need a break, okay, use the floaties half the time. Take them off half the time so the child realizes that there's something keeping them afloat and there's a skill they have to do to swim as well.
What's the first thing you do in a class full of first-time kid swimmers?
Sing songs.
You start the class with a song.
Yes, we have a happy, happy song to start the class. We have a song for kicking, a song for blowing bubbles. We have songs for pulling your arms. We have songs for floating on your back, basically. So for the kids under the age of four, the whole program is through music. And when they hear a certain song, you start getting a certain skill.
What's the first skill that you teach a child?
The first skill that we teach a child would be kicking and blowing bubbles. They kind of come at the same time because they're in the same class. And we also teach floating on the back. Those are like the three main primary things we try to get them to do. But certain children will like floating on their back. Certain children will like putting their face in the water. And typically they don't like the other if they like one of them.
Now, where does treading water come in all of this? I always thought that was a really useful skill for someone who doesn't know how to swim.
Treading water is a useful skill, but if you think about it, treading water can also be a big struggle, especially if you're panicked. And so our primary goal is to get the child to roll over on their back and float and relax, because the key is to relax for, you know, a longer survival-type skill. That's why we tend to push the kids to roll on their back and float versus treading water first. And treading water is hard. Yeah, you've probably done it yourself. It's not an easy thing to do as far as comparing it to floating.
It used to be parents or people trying to teach kids how to swim would just throw them in the water. The tough love approach.
Yes, I've heard that rumor.
You don't do that.
No, we don't. Everything in our program is very... We believe in, like, creating the whole child. Everything is about the person who I developed this program with in Houston, Texas. Her name is Leslie Crawford, and she had her BS in psychology. I had the swimming skills under my belt, and together we got together, and I was very focused on how the mechanics worked. She was very focused on how the mind part of it worked. That's where a lot of the songs came into effect. That's where... everything that we do, like, when a child finishes a skill, it's even if the child is... you know, coughing and sputtering on the water, it's always greeted with a good job or fantastic or way to go, dude, or whatever, to where they're feeling positive about the experience, even if it's something that's a little frightening.
Most kids don't want to put their heads underwater. How do you coax them into that?
We do it. We basically take the child. If the child's over the age of 4 or 5, then yes, you definitely have to coax them, and you do it through different games, such as putting things on the bottom of the pool and telling them to look at them, or just trying to get them to blow bubbles and then say, okay, I'm not going to blow bubbles with your mouth and nose in the water, and then let's add the eyes to that. And just a gradual process to get their face in the water. With younger kids who aren't necessarily verbalizing so much at the time, then we have a system where you count 1, 2, 3, you say bubbles, you blow across their face, which causes them to inhale. It's the same principle of, like, if you opened a door and a cold blast of wind has hit you in the face, you breathe in as an adult. It's the same thing for a child. They'll automatically breathe in, and then you submerge them. And when the lungs are full, they can take on no more water or air. So then the next thing they have to do is blow out.
Have you ever had anything go wrong, I guess dangerously wrong, during a lesson?
No. The most dangerous thing I would think that really has ever gone what you would call wrong in a lesson is a parent, in my opinion, is a parent stopping a lesson when a child's really fearful, because the only danger involved with that is the child thinking there was a reason to be afraid, if that makes sense. If a child is afraid and the parents are wanting to stop and, like, come back at it again, I request that they stay in the pool for, like, another 2 or 3 lessons, and we'll just have fun in the water. We won't do any kind of work. We won't do any kind of hard skills. So the child leaves on a positive note. And that way, the most damaging thing I think that's ever happened in my class is a parent pulling a child out, and the child was upset with the water, and then it took forever to get the child back in.
It sounds as if, at least for the younger kids, that you have to work as much with parents as you do with kids. Which are harder?
Parents are much harder than the children. Children are great. They've been, you know, from birth, they've been taught that they've got to do this. An adult's talking to them, they have to do what they're told. Once you become an adult, then you have opinions and questions, and this is your child, and needs to be raised. My child, and needs to be raised this way. And that's when it starts to become a little more difficult, because you're spending a lot of time explaining to parents, no, this is really the reason why this should work this way, and so on and so forth.
So you have a parent second-guessing you while you're trying to teach the child to swim.
Oh, a lot of the time. Oh, yeah. Or that just doesn't necessarily jive with their parenting philosophy. And then you got to, like, talk through it to see what they want. You got to explain to them why you're doing what you're doing. You've got parents that will get into the class and say, oh, well, this is their first time, and we really shouldn't put their face underwater. Well, yeah, you should, because that's how you teach kids how to swim. They got to get their face in. Or you'll get a note from the mom on the 5th lesson that, I told them they don't have to put their face in the water or float or swim to you off the table. Well, okay, now you've tied my hands. What do I do?
Do you ever say, you over there, you have to go sit in the corner so I can teach your kid?
Oh, I kick parents out all the time. You're out of here. Bye. I'm always sending parents out of the room. Because sometimes parents just flat out get in the way of the learning process.
I'm speaking with Jim Spears. He's a swimming instructor who works in New York City. We're going to talk some more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Back with swimming instructor Jim Spears. You teach adults too, right?
Yes, yes.
My husband can't swim, and I'm not sure he's ever really figured out how that happened. He loves water sports and boating. What factors have you found that usually cause adults to be non-swimmers?
I mean, there's a multitude of reasons. It can be a traumatic experience as a child, such as kids holding kids underwater. It can be a problem at the beach, like where a wave knocked them over. It can be lack of exposure to the water as a child. You know, the parents' interests were in different areas. It could be that they didn't get the right teacher, you know. And so that totally turned them off. Or it could be down to the fact that the water at camp was really cold and they weren't going in. It's any number of reasons why that they would not swim. The problem, though, with an adult and getting them to swim at that point becomes these many, many years and phobias that they've developed, oh, I can't swim, that you then got to have to get through.
Now, when adults come to you and say, I can't swim, do they have all sorts of myths or justifications? I'm thinking I've heard people say they're not capable of swimming because their bodies don't float like other members of the human race.
Right, or heavy bones. Yeah, we get all of those. And to be honest, a lot of the time, it's not that their bodies don't float. And granted, there are people that don't float. I am not a floater. I float on the bottom of the pool.
Is it a matter of body fat percentage?
Not percentage. It's a matter of where the body fat is. Basically, women tend to float better than men because the body fat's higher for carrying babies. Men's body fat's a little bit lower. Men's body fat's a little bit higher, even higher than where the women's body fat is. So men's legs tend to drag them down. If you ever watched a man try to float, his legs go first and his body follows all the way down to the bottom of the pool, which is my case. But there are very, very thin people that can float. It just depends on where the balance is in your body. And you can achieve a better balance by working with your arm placement, like when you're floating on your back, raising your hands underwater above your head makes your body longer, and it changes where the fulcrum is of your body. And it will make some people actually float. It's just playing with your body and figuring out what makes your body float.
How then do you get an adult into the water when they come to you with these phobias? It seems as if to teach adults, you'd have to be half a therapist, half a swim coach.
Well, the cool thing about adults is they've paid you money, and it's not like mom and dad paying you money. So they're like, okay, I've made this investment. I'm going to get in. And so you get them into the water, and then you just totally, you know, you explain away a lot of the problems that they're having in the water, you know, like putting their face in. Once they become adults, there's all kinds of different ways to exhale underwater. You can do it through your nose. You can do it through your mouth. You can do it long and slow. You can do it very fast, which is called explosive breathing. And so it's just working away until you find out what works for them.
And have you had failures with adults?
I have not. Yeah, I mean, there's been adults that you have really had. You know, I had one lady who cried every time that she was wanting to get into the pool. And don't make me get in. Kind of thing, but at least she tried. She finished out what she started to do, which was at least get into the water. But I don't necessarily consider that a success because she didn't leave swimming, but she at least was less fearful about even getting into a pool.
What was that all about?
That was about she was washed up on a beach and resuscitated as a child. So there was a big fear there.
Oh, I can understand
about
that.
Being underwater.
My guest is Jim Spears. He's a swimming instructor in New York City, and we're talking about swimming, learning to swim, and pool safety. Most pool accidents seem to happen when parents are right there watching their kids. Do you think it happens because the kids do have this false sense of security, or even older children have a false sense of security because they've been taking swimming lessons and they think they can just do it?
Partially. That's part of the reason. The other part of the reason is just children are very curious, and so therefore they want to go experience the water on their own. You know, the older they get, the less they want mom and dad to be involved, the more they want to do things on their own, and the more trouble they get into with all aspects of life.
How fast can a child drown?
Once they start taking on water, it can happen anywhere between, like, and it depends on what you're calling drowning. Drowning is an experience where someone has to be rescued. Drowning does not necessarily mean dead. Because if a lifeguard has to go into the water, that is a drowning victim. They have to go get the person. So it depends on what you're looking for. And it's also very age appropriate. You know, it's anywhere from a minute, to like 3 minutes as far as where brain damage starts to happen. As far as lack of oxygen to the brain and whatnot. It also depends on how long the child is struggling to stay above water. There's a lot of factors, but there was an experience I had in Houston, Texas, where a mom had two children, a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old, and she went into the house to get chalk. They're making like hopscotch boxes or something like that. And she came back out to find the 5-year-old diving for the 3-year-old who was on the bottom. And that's when she decided to enroll the kids in swimming lessons. The ambulance had to come. The child was resuscitated. He was taken to the hospital. The 3-year-old, who was the one who had actually drowned and been brought back, resuscitated, had no problem with swimming. The 5-year-old was petrified because he had the full memory of everything that had happened. And the 3-year-old, to this day, still believes the ambulance came for the 5-year-old, which was... made it easier to teach the 3-year-old, but the 5-year-old's phobias got a lot worse.
What was the end of that story?
They both swam beautifully.
If you do go to the aid of a drowning person, what's the first thing you should do?
No one that's not trained should go after a drowning person. You should take something with you, a pole, a towel, something to reach out to them so you can pull them back into shore. You should not make contact with them as long as they are conscious and active. Preferably you would, before ever leaving shore, have someone call for help and then go in and get them and bring them back out. But the Red Cross rules are reach, which means from deck, row, which means you're still in something, like a boat, throw, and then go. That's how they teach lifeguards. It's like their little mantra that they say, reach, throw, row, go.
What advice do you have for pool owners beyond just, fence that pool in and fence it well? How can they prepare for emergencies?
They should have objects around the pool for such as poles, such as rescue tubes, or ring buoys on ropes that they can throw out to people. They should, as I said before, have CPR, have first aid. If they're good swimmers and they feel up to it, take a lifeguarding course. A fence is just a bigger obstacle. It's not going to necessarily keep someone out. It may keep them out, but it's more of a challenge to get over a fence. So it doesn't always keep a child out. And all the fences that I've seen in the Hamptons when I'm out there teaching this year, most of the children already know how to work the gate at age 3 and 5, and they can already get in.
How did you learn to swim?
My folks belonged to a residential pool in the neighborhood, and they had a really great swimming instructor there by the name of Lucky. He was a really great guy. And so at age 3, they stuck me in the pool. I had to start learning to swim. I took lots of private lessons, lots of group, and started swimming on a swim team when I was 5 years old.
So you had absolutely no dangerous or frightening swim experiences under your belt?
They were more dangerous for my mother, meaning she would come in and would have left me with the lifeguards, and at age 6 came back and saw me diving off the high board. So it was more like her like going, there goes my kid, kind of thing.
But you were fine.
I was fine. She wasn't, but I was.
Jim Spears, thanks a lot for talking today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Swimming instructor Jim Spears. He teaches in New York City. I'm Barbara Bulgave, and this is Fresh Air.